recording. We're just, I feel like both of you have updates about housing. That's right.
Yeah.
So great. Whatever. We'll do our thing. Are we ready to do it?
Let's get it. You know, it's crazy. Like, you know, Tin Can Phone, it started in prison, you know, and when we came home, they kept like our first interviews and all of our first content in bondage. We had to start over. You know what I'm saying? We lost our mind and we lost Joe, but we gained Blue. Tin Can Phone. Did that time and I bounced back. Had us in the beanies, now snap back. Boys in blue trying to snap back. Trying to make sure that my guys never go back. Ain't worried about the instas and the Snapchats. I'm worried about the homies on drugs, close to relax. It's messed up when you know the dealer and the buyer. Look him in his eyes, I can tell if he lying. Been locked up with gorillas in the lines. Yeah, respect to get you far and don't move around blind. Forget about the chow hall, I ain't waiting in line. Bust down on the bed, spread with the homies. Not no more, we on the streets waiting for him. Free such and such, free with the wop. We all on cable talking it out. Me, Mike, and Blue and a couple of guests. Puppin' knowledge like petrol, who got the gas? Doing the work, trying to heal for my past. Politicking on the yard, trying to touch me a bag. Mike was on the yard with the hitters in his half. Orange beanie on his head with the thing in the bag. Blue photo shoot fresh, sharp enough to cut a wrist. First day of school, cooling ain't with the cuddling. Tin Can Phone, yes, gang in the bitch. Tin Can Phone, yes, gang in the bitch. Tin Can Phone, yes, gang in the bitch. Mike, Blue, Queens. What's happening? It's Tin Can Phone. Gang in this mug, you already know. Misfit Audi, I'm in here with my better Michael Bernard Stevenson Jr., the mad artist. What's happening?
You know, I feel pretty good today. It's definitely, this is my Friday, so I feel very Friday where I'm like, yes, but I'm also like, I think I'm gonna go to bed early. But yeah, doing all right. Blue Man, how you doing?
Yeah. I'm going through it a little bit, but as much adversity as there is, I know it's my thinking, and I get to watch Queez do his thing to that intro, so that kind of brought me back up a little bit, you know, the new Tin Can Phone intro.
Oh, yeah.
Dope stuff. I love it.
It definitely sets the tone. Like I said, I was feeling low energy, but I'm like, we're back, and it's exciting for the temporal check-in. And it sounds crisp, and it was good to hear it on the radio, more or less. And the episode is chugging along, and the project is chugging along. All good things. Again, thank you, Southeast Uplift. Thank you, Metro. Thank you, KBU. And all of our listeners and supporters out there, it definitely means a lot. For those of you, if you're listening chronologically, last recording, we did an episode with Shalimar at Holy Beans, and we started... It wasn't in our original episode chronicle to do housing, but it came up as part of the Vanport Mosaic Festival. And it was timely then in our personal temporal lives. And I, as things developed, I thought we should dig into the episode even more to both update and further elucidate these different topics. Yeah. Queez, you're packing up, right?
Yeah.
How's that going with the baby?
I ain't even gonna lie, like I ain't did nothing. I've been working still, you know, the work don't stop. So I do, like, you know, get boxes, I make sure the little things that she needed is done. But yeah, she might, like, I go to work and come home and it's 15 more boxes in the kitchen. Right. But like, she told me she ain't packing my shit, though. She like, that's on you, buddy. She threw two boxes in the room and was like, that's on you if it ain't, you know? But you know how I moved, or like, I like, it's just crazy because my mom always speaks on, you know, being road runners, because she was a road runner. And it's like her thing, what she says, if it can't fit in a backpack, it get left. You know what I'm saying? Like really moving in backpacks. And this is where it gets important, because a lot of dudes that come from what we come from never have housing in their name, never have. And this is currently right now, a lot of guys I know, like, they live with baby moms, they live with girlfriends, they live with people they just met. Right. And the common thing is get out. So what we learn is a backpack, a duffel bag, like, you know, like we move light. And for so long, you never could make a house a home because you move so light, and you used to moving light because you used to being the one when things go bad to getting out. You know what I'm saying? And now I'm seeing how that is affecting me now, where just me, you feel me, packing up and moving, feel like damn, I'm packing my shit again. And it's like, I just got these three duffel bags right here. I'm telling my brother, he like, I'm gonna help you pack. I'm gonna help you do this. I'm like, bro, you know me, bro. I got the duffel bags, bro. I got three duffel bags, bro. If it don't fit in there, it's getting left. You know what I'm saying? But it's still the lesson was a good lesson when I was road running and moving around in the streets like that. But when you're trying to, you know, move as a whole, like, you know, but she also, she be at home, so she be enjoying that. Like, it's a whole enjoyment thing for her to be packing up her spot and knowing that we go into a bigger spot. And, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's an enjoyment thing. Or I could have just stopped working and been helping her, you know what I'm saying? So, like, the space has been working. Yeah, it's good. Like, it's scary. It's scary because it's rent is higher, but, like, gas is way more for me out here. It's different. Like, we don't have a washer and dryer here, and we do a lot of clothes, especially with a baby. So, like, we spending, I can't even count how much. All I know is that I keep asking for $25 more. Every time I hit the laundromat, they want $25 more. So, but, and then, so having that in the spot, it cancels that part out. So it's things that, you know, like, cancel each other out that's going to make it cool. And, yeah, like, it's finally a move that's not forced. Like, for me, even from coming home, even you could take it all the way back to being in prison, you get moved off them units, you get moved out them institutions, and it's never like somebody saying, like, you going and be like, hey, I want to go here. It's usually, hey, roll up, you going here just for whatever the reason may be. So you forced to move. And then for me, I had to go to Shoreline Sub-City housing when I came home, which is another forced move because that's most definitely not where I wanted to go. You know what I'm saying? So then just dealing with parole, like, my situation, I had everything under control. Like, all my classes I went to, all my UAs I passed, I got so many certificates for all the things I've done. But the one thing that I realized have always been a burden and something that always been like a weight on me is giving parole addresses. You know what I'm saying? And it's not that I don't have a place to stay. It's just that a lot of the people I deal with, like, I don't want them tied into parole and sure. They feel like they're getting searched and they're being looked at. And, you know, it's past,
you know, that, like, if the PO is rolling up on the house, like, the people that you're with are kind of also under surveillance.
Yeah, no. And that's most definitely, that's why they want
cop regalia. Like, they show up in bulletproof vests and
like a cop
to see, like, a home.
Hey, sometimes they don't even come in. They just come to the door, but you came to the door looking like SWAT, you know? But, like, that's always been one of the things with me. Like, I never really had a trouble with, like, PVs and violating my probations, and I never really had those issues. My thing was always just not having a spot, which I kind of encountered this time. Even the spots that be cool where, you know, you are accepted and you could go, sometimes parole feel like that may not be the best place for you, or just on their watch, they just don't think, you know, because usually what we want to do, they feel like it's the wrong thing. If we want to do it, it usually is the wrong thing to them. So they kind of foreshadow him, like, you know, they like the places that they make you be. So for me, like, the trauma with that was not having my name on no lease or not having my name on no, you feel me, just get it in this person's name, get it over here, whatever. But, yeah, so this move is finally the move that's not forced. This ain't a forced move. This is a choice move. And I'm closer to the city. I'm going to be, like, you know, like, physically there to the events that 10 Can Phone have, all the things for this summer. We shouldn't have had this summer busing. You know what I'm saying? And it's a lot of things that's going on with Blue Gallery, 10 Can Phone that we really, you know, and I need to be engaged with. So, you know, this move is the first move in my life that's, like, really not a forced move, and it's a choice move. But it's still scary. Because it's like, you know, I'm moving a whole family. It's not just me and my backpack. I'm moving a whole family to, you know, and like, nothing is really like.
Wow. I think all that's really interesting. That particular observation that it's your first not forced move.
Yeah.
I mean, I just to hear what you said and not speculate the origin of that timeline wise that you're identifying with it as the first kind of move of your choice. So that's a really interesting paradigm. I was also a little bit it is news to me in this moment that you found a spot.
Yeah, we did. Okay.
Was it good? Was it easy? Like, was it tough?
Nah, like, this is the thing, like, so I be feeling like, you know, like, I don't really be speaking on shit because I don't really know. Like, I just be feeling like people be having, like, bad juju or bad energy. Like, you know, like, act like they, and not you guys, you know, y'all my brothers, but it's just a habit of mine to really not speak on things, like, you know what I'm saying? Because I'm spiritual, she's spiritual. We be seeing, like, I be seeing little things, like, people be acting like they cool. They be wanting to, the only time they talk to you, they want to know what's going on with you. They just asking you hella questions, right? Mm. A lot of times they be just wanting to see, one, if they doing better than you, what they can get from you. Like, you know, I really ain't never been a question answer. So, like, I just had a habit of not telling people what it's doing until it's done, because then it's like that bad juju. Sure. You know what I'm saying? So even for y'all, like, I just be forgetting, like, okay, it's there. But, like, for me, it's like, even for, like, money, right? Even when I get paid, I'll be like, if until I got it and I could actually fit, like, use it, I don't got it. Like, a lot of people, they know, like, oh, I'm going to get paid this day, so I'm going to do this, 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 and this. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, for me, I got to really have it, because I've been let down so much, and I done been, this is going to happen, this going to happen, this going to happen, and it don't. So even when we got the spot, I was telling her, like, don't tell nobody. Like, don't be telling your friends. Don't be, like, just wait till we get in there, because anything could happen. Anything could happen, and you feel me? So I'd be, like, thinking like that, but she'd be trying to help me realize, like, you know, like, it's the people you're dealing with. Like, we're not dealing with the same people. We're not dealing with people that's, like, I don't got nobody who's, like, against me or, like, no, ops, what they call it, you feel me, oppositions and shit like that. Like, I don't really got that, so I don't really.
Quiz, though, how many times did you have to hear somebody talking about Measure 11 being changed? You know, like, we got this. You know what I mean? I think for every year, we got this. Measure 11's getting overturned.
Yep.
Da, 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 da.
It's going to be retroactive, though.
Keep talking about it, man. Keep talking on it. Yeah. But until it happens, like, I can't put anything in there, you know? I just got to just wait till stuff actually.
Hey.
Fruition, you know?
I wanted it to happen, but I really didn't want it to happen because I had Measure 11. And, like, at that time, it would have been bad for me because I was comfortable knowing my time wasn't going to change no matter what I did. You get what I'm saying? So, like, an insight, and this ain't good, and I'm not glorifying, like, but these are just certain rules in certain institutions. I don't know about Oregon, but I know in California. Like, what we do is, people that have good time, you know what I'm saying? You're a liability. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can never truly be part of what's going on, because when it comes to that good time and you staying here for some, you going to tell. You know what I'm saying? You going to debrief to them people because your good time is on the line. People got families and kids and visits and, you know what I'm saying? And for me, at that time, how I was thugging, good time was a liability, bro. You got to get away from me. Like, I wouldn't even associate with people who had good time. And, like, a lot of the people that I dealt with at that time, mind you, this is 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013. This is the beginning of the 7 year, the beginning of the whole 10, actually. So my time was different. You know what I'm saying? But, like, yeah, like, I didn't even politic with people who had good time because, like, you couldn't be trusted. So I didn't want Major 11 to have good time. I didn't want to have good time. I wanted to thug. But then as I started going through that, I was like, damn, I wish Major 11 had a good time. Man, I'm trying to go home.
Like, that's another question. Talk about, like, reform within the system. But I just feel that same sense that there's, like, so many people that want to, like, say, yeah, Queez, we got you. And there's all these people, and maybe you're not experiencing this because you don't, like you said, you don't necessarily have opponents or opposition. But, like, as many people as I have,
yeah,
to, like, support me and, like, be like, Blue, we got you. We love you. Like, we see you. There's people out there that don't, you know, and they don't even know me. Right. But,
yeah,
but they will try to do harm. This is, like, a real thing that I'm experiencing, like, now.
Yeah.
And that's real, you know, it's and having to fight for everything and never, like, counting your chickens until they're hatched, you know? And doesn't mean, like, every moment feels that way. Like, I know we both have moments, like, probably when you're with your kid or when I'm with my lady or the dog or whatever, you know, doing art, yeah, that's, like, outside of that sort of context, but it still is real, you know?
Yeah.
I put it together, but for the listeners, what is Measure 11?
I can break that down a little bit. Measure 11 is a mandatory minimum law that they came up with, I believe, in the 90s. Essentially took all of the different things that they put into the sentencing structure. Sometimes they would say, oh, this is their first offense, or this is the only time they've ever gotten in trouble, or there are these mitigating circumstances. And all those things would go into a normal sentence. Well, Measure 11 removed everything from this sentencing grid and created a little box. And in that box, it had, you know, 10 crimes considered, you know, something like this is a estimate of things considered person-to-person crimes. And they all just carried a mandatory minimum, and that's what you got. So maybe you got 40 months or 80 months or 100 months or 300 months based on different crimes that were alleged to have happened, and with no mitigating circumstances, with no like, oh, you know, this is their first time or this is their 10th time, you know, both people with the same situation get 300 months. And it's been proven to not be helpful. It's been proven to just add to mass incarceration and not to rehabilitation. And also it has really destroyed a lot of, especially young people's lives, you know, people going in at 18 for a mandatory 10. And the good time aspect would be what Quiz was talking about, is if you have good conduct behind bars, that your sentence would become shorter, which is actually safer for the prisons, safer for the guards, safer for other people who are incarcerated. And it actually has a relationship to somebody's conduct, right? Somebody has good conduct, they get out earlier, right? There's some sense there. Well, Measure 11 says no, zero good time. You have a mandatory minimum, you get nothing for good time. I had over 10 years of clear conduct, whatever, right? You know, it doesn't matter.
Blue is being good to them.
It was what it was, you know. I thought about like what the rules were and like what made sense to me. And sometimes they didn't make sense to me. And sometimes
if you could have just picked a rule to break, what would have been? What would have been?
Oh, like selling art. You know?
Oh, interesting.
That's against the rules. You can't sell art. Like you can't make a profit off your art on the inside. But you know.
Which is interesting to hear, because in my experience, I feel like I've witnessed a lot of art for coffee exchange.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And it's one of those things that even though it's against the rules.
Sure. You could get written up about it. You know,
what they're trying to do is they're trying to stop somebody from being extorted. Right. So they create a rule to stop one person getting exploited by another person. But in reality, usually those trades are, you know, based on consent between two people. I'll make you a card, you give me a bag of coffee, you know. As opposed to, oh, now you gave me a bag of coffee, so I own you. It's not the
right. I remember at San Yam, which is another minimum facility, they actually was trying to start a tattoo program, because there was the art, and they were just like, this is something that goes on in a prison no matter where you are, no matter what, this is happening. And these guys are really good at it. This is where they're finally going to be sober and had a chance to take their craft serious. And of course, it was a bunch of inmates or adults in custody who was pushing for it. This is not the words of the COs. But yeah, now I remember that the sergeant and everybody was like on board, and like it was going to be a tattoo program. I don't know what happened, because I ended up getting transferred out that institution. But like art is like, it's one of those things that's a rule that you never, like, I never thought, because it's right. You do it in front of the COs. The COs know like who's the dopest drawers, and like it's never been like a thing to think about is contraband. But then like on season one, we had our episode Contraband. It's the things that just every single day, like you just, and you could find yourself in a hole, solitary confinement, or find yourself locked.
You're having a black pen.
Like, yeah. So yeah, just, you brought context to that when you mentioned it being contraband, or like, I mean, my whole bid from my whole 10 years, like people don't even hide it. You just sell your art, like, right? They just set it up on the table in the day room. Like, you just, it's just set up like a like swap meet or something.
Yeah.
This conversation is making me realize, I don't know if you either of you know, but apparently Hanley's head honcho over at CRCI.
Oh, wow. Good for them.
Yeah.
No, that is good for them, though. Hanley, we Hanley.
What is, it seems like you're having a slow realization. What is it
for me or Blue?
For you. You look like you're contemplating.
I'm just like, do you really? But then I'm thinking like, nah, we do Hanley. He stood up for us. He like, this is the thing, people always mix screw with the arts and socials, the lib list, the Phoenix Risings and all the programs that come in there, people think the institution like has anything to do with that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So like, no, again, like the institution has nothing to do with any of that. Like they don't even like for people to come in there and humanize the adults in custody. But I would have to think hard because I was thinking of situations and in all the situations I could think of, Hanley stood on our side. Like he didn't never like, you know, get too scared and throw the program under the bus or like he always stood on our side. So yeah, we most definitely, he like down there the only one out of the whole, like I can even count like just him.
There's more allies, right? I mean, we can, if we really think about it, find those people. And what's funny is a lot of times they're saying yes to something that's so obviously good and positive, and all they got to do is say yes and they become a hero. Like, I wish my life was like that. You just say yes to something. It's like, hey, do you want to save those drowning kids? I do. Let's do it. Oh man, Blue, you're such a nice guy. Like, you know, like such easy victories in DOC. I mean, you don't.
The crazy part is they fail epically. Like them COs be like, you could really see how goofy they is when it comes to dealing with the classes. Like when it came to dealing with certain people, like you could just see how goofy they was. And a lot of them was led, like a lot of them was just led to act or be a certain way because like, I ain't gonna lie to you. I don't remember none of their names. Like I don't remember none of their names, bro. I don't remember CO names. I just call them bro, what's up, bro? You don't even got a name, but like some of them you could tell was really cool people, but I guess through their training or through whoever, like it's crazy, even in institution when we got new COs we could tell how their career was going to be by who trained them.
Yeah,
like when we see like oh they walking with Wooty Wop, like oh yeah they gonna be, yep it's over. Or if they walking with somebody, but like Yeah.
They would set those guys up for failure too. They would set them up. It's like really this. Oh man.
This is what I realized about prison too. Talking about housing, like apartments, like places where you're around other people, like COs, and you know the adults in custody. That's like COs. You know they just don't got the badge, like. When you like, I notice in my apartment sometimes I be just like watching, right? Everybody that I run into, I've met them before, and that's what I think in my head. Like, I'd be like, bro, I'm not them, just their personality, their character, their traits. Like, I'd be like, prison literally would teach you how to live with, like, you got meth heads, like heroin addicts, gang members, like, you got so many different people who has to correspond in one living quarter. I don't trip off of, like, I hear people talk about just like washing dryers or any like thing. I'm like, bro, anything is cool. Like I'm my own room, bro. But like living, I learned, like, it's crazy because how I lived in prison puts me ahead how I live out here.
More, I agree.
Get what I'm saying? Like wiping the sink out after you use the sink, just like not leaving a spit or toothpaste or anything. You're like, a lot of people don't even think about that. You're like, you just go in the bathroom and it's just hella in a sink. But like, I just think like, if you do that in there, if you do that in the pen, like somebody really will like punch you in your face type. You know what I'm saying? So like, even just
waiting in line, man. I don't like, have you ever had somebody be like, I'm so sorry you had to wait. It's like, I just laugh, you know?
Yeah.
Two people were ahead of me. I had to wait in line. It's just like.
Blue, how long have you been out?
Like wait. Four years, maybe.
Is there anything that you think you still carry right now that you got from there in your everyday living?
Yeah, a lot of stuff. A lot of
stuff. Yeah?
One thing I think about is something that people don't seem to think about a lot. I do. Is that you never know who you're talking to. Treat people with respect, man. And, sometimes I see people act real crazy around another human being, and that could be the last thing they ever do, you know, like for real. And
especially now,
I think about that sometimes. I carry a lot of the stuff that I sort of worked through on the inside and the way that I wanted to be as a human being, the person that I wanted to be. Those things became foundational. It wasn't like a weekend class for me. It was like I was involved all the time in like process,
you know, and studying and reading and thinking about like the mistakes I did make and like, you know, we do harm to our families, you know, and going inside is like tough on everybody. And that made an impact on my life in a pretty serious way, in a way that I basically vowed that I'm not going to put myself in a situation that could lead to harm of people that I care about if I can avoid it, you know? So
yeah
I think I carry a lot of that. And I think also just like patience and personal responsibility. It's like, yeah, I mean, people who don't clean up their own dishes, I mean, you only have one dish, you know, on the inside. You got one Tupperware maybe and a spoon. You know, I believe strongly for one in not having other people clean up after me. And, you know, taking responsibility for my own mess, like you're saying, wiping out the sink, you know, cleaning the toilet, whatever it may be. And also that there's no job that's beneath me. You know, I might be too busy sometimes, but I'm not too good to mop the floor or to sweep or clean a toilet or whatever it is. Like those things, I think when you've done every job and you've like humbled yourself in that way, I think that you can carry that with you. So
yeah. Some of these things are real interesting, you know, like I think from the sink to like some of these more kind of transformative and spiritual kind of awarenesses you're talking about, Blue, like it's all just conjuring in me. Cause I mean, I'm working with youth right now and I have like teen employees, and between the students who are doing all kinds of crazy stuff and the teen employees where it's kind of like early in their job history, there's a lot of development that's taking place, but it's in like a super, it's literally Fred Hampton summer camp. So it's like, you know, we had a guest and they were like thirsty. I was like, we got water, we got food. Like we are taking care of you. Like that's the culture of this space. And it's so unfortunate and frustrating to me as a witness more than a participant that these lessons you're learning, you're talking about like practices that you have that are good for you in your own life management and in conjunction with living with and around other people. And it was prison, but it wasn't that like prison, the entity was like, okay, everyone clean up after yourself. It's like, watch out, that dog's gonna get you, you know, like if you don't do this or that, you know. And then some of the kind of transformative stuff that you're talking about, Blue, is all your own process. So all that's pretty fascinating. I thought it was really interesting, Quiz, that you were like, normally I'm kind of a roadrunner, I'm a backpack guy.
Yeah.
And now you're like moving with a partner and a child, and maybe you'll pack some boxes if you get around to it. What is that like? You talked about how it's the first for all this stuff. How are you feeling about this stuff?
I haven't done anything. And that's exactly why, because I'm not really feeling that. Like,
interesting.
Me committing those actions is me submitting that that's who I am now, and I'm just not at a space where I'm like, I'm still, I got my duffel bags. You know what I'm saying? Like I got my duffel bags. I don't got no boxes. I don't no, that's not who I am, you know what I'm saying? So I understand that it's to come, but it's like I still feel like in my heart I'm a backpack type of, you feel me, like the jumping, you feel me? So like it's scary for me. That's what I'm saying. Everything is scary for me because this is like a life that I'm, everything, every single day is a life I have never lived. You feel me? Like every single day. Cause when I wake up, I have both, I'm in tune with, you feel me, all those different personalities. And I know who's leading the way. So it's certain practices when I get up, I say certain things so that I could try to get this personality. And because I was diagnosed with multiple personality disorder, right? I never really understood like what it meant. I thought it was like, I would know. I thought like I would feel something like, oh, this is a different person. I'm this person today. You know what I'm saying? But that's not what it is. It's just mood swings. It's like one thing, I might eat something today and then tomorrow that might be the nastiest thing in the world to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just something that it's like, it's, but mentally I'm learning like family shit. Learning like my daddy wasn't really there. Like I was in foster care and jail and you feel me? So he really wasn't there. So I don't really know, like, you know, like, I don't really know how to like what a, you feel me, husband. Like, I don't really know how to go like that. You know what I'm saying? It's sad, but like, I really don't know how to go like that. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I'm the last one still trying to put everything in a duffel bag, like trying to like You feel me? But like, she trying to teach me though, like, it's just certain responsibilities and certain things. It's hard for me, my, I ain't gonna cap. Like, this is really hard for me. Like, everything is different. Like I'm saying, I think people don't understand, like, everything is different. Everything is new. Everything is like, because I was living like this, even when I was with, you know, my ex and my daughter, like, I was always going to work. I was always doing that was needed to be done. But internally, I always still, like, I even was still rapping hella more. Like, I still was engaging in to where I still was, like, me. And that's why me and her had to go our separate ways, because, like, where I was going and where she was, like, that prison time separate, it was just cause a big separation. You get what I'm saying? So, and then getting into this relationship, it's just kind of like I was getting in a relationship with a friend. You get what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't like a come be in this relationship and come be the best for me type. It was like, come get in, like, just come be here and learn yourself type. But she's like teaching me how to, like, you know, do husband, boyfriend shit. Like, that I always was like, that's some square. Like, I ain't doing that shit. I'm out all night. You feel me? I'm right here with my brothers. I'm out all night. Like, you feel me? I'm still engaging in that. And even though I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go to work. Like, I'm coming home at like 11:30, 12, going to sleep, waking up at 3:34 to go to work and hella tired. You feel me? And then when I'm irritable now whatever she say sound like a, you feel me? And I'm like going through this, like, right now, like, this is what I go through right now. Still trying to control, you feel me? So, like, this is what I came to the conclusion to. It was fucked up, but, like, I have to get back in tune and put prison rules in effect. I have to put prison rules in effect, because when I ask myself, when was I the sharpest and when was I at my best? When I was in prison. You get what I'm saying? The only time I could not roll this backwood and smoke this tree, like, in prison, for some reason, it was, like, the dumbest thing in the world to me. Like, ain't no way I'm finna jeopardize visits with my kids and, you feel me, for the weed and this and that. But now I'm like, I'm late for work. Feel like I'm jeopardizing, you feel me? And so it's like, I gotta get snapped back into that mode so that I could get back, like, to where I was at. You know what I'm saying? It sounds dumb as fuck. Like,
it's not, you know.
I gotta get back to.
I feel that with, like, some other folks that we all know, where I was working with y'all inside and everyone was sharp. They were hungry. They wanted something. They were ready to work on it. And not everyone, you know, but some people I'd come back. I mean, literally, you know, someone we both know, you know, like, creating whole murals and all this stuff and really passionate. And then they got out and they don't have any self-control. And so we're not able to impulse control. And so the stuff that you're talking about is really fascinating, because, and there's two phases of the thought. So the thing you just were talking about is giving yourself prison rules is really fascinating, because it's a both a form of self-awareness that you are now able to, for lack of a better term, impose on yourself in order for your own self-betterment. The thing I was thinking before that was, you know, it's almost actually this beautiful thing where you're like, I'm still challenged. I'm still learning all these things for the first time. And also, it's not in prison. And so you are now in a challenging state where you are also invested in your own success. And that is, again, the kind of mechanism I wish we could figure out how to dispense to people outside of a carceral context. But I think it's interesting and exciting that you, not only are you aware, but you're organizing in order to, like, succeed.
Yeah, I think if I can piggyback on that, it's like that awareness becomes highly important. And we're going to carry stuff out of prison. Like, we're going to carry behaviors and experiences. I used to say we get acculturated. Like, people would say you get institutionalized. I was like, you're going to come out. You're not going to come out unscathed. Like, what that looks like is going to be different for each person. But I think, like, the fact that you have, like, awareness of the things that are obstacles, whether it's in mostly within relationship, I think that, because that first thing, figuring out, like, man, what am I missing? Because there are things, like, I think I talked about on one show, is like slowing down and, like, waiting before I talk, you know, that's, like, kind of a prison thing, you know, like, and that's not always the best thing in a relationship. Maybe sometimes it is, but sometimes people want to answer, you know, and I don't always do that. I think about what I'm going to say, but, I do think it's interesting when you come up and you're able to see those things that have developed within you, and also these things that you've been taken away from, because we were taken away from society and humans and close relationships for a long time, you know, a long time.
Yes.
And no matter who we, in our minds and in our bodies, the same person in a way that went in, you know, there's these connections and there's differences, but it's like, you don't really know what you're missing until you're there. You don't really know what deficiencies you have or relationship stuff you got to learn. Like, I've read books, man. I had to when I realized that I was missing some stuff. Like,
oh God,
you know.
And actually, Blue, I wanted to ask, when Queez was talking about all that, he's like, oh, I could live with anyone. I know that you've been kind of shopping for a more idyllic living space. You know, what were the things that you felt like you needed for yourself that you didn't have, and kind of, yeah, update us.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I mentioned a little bit on our last show, or the show with Shalimar, just like about like what I was trying to do. It's like when you get out, like, I mean, we were, Queez and I were both in subsidized situations. For me, I had a room, a single room. It was on a floor that shared a bathroom, and the door opened. So I was happy, you know, like, it was okay. It was way better than where I came from. Right. And then just before COVID hit, I started really looking. I just was like, I need to be out of this place. It was like the sort of thing you sign in and sign out, you know, and, and even though I didn't have a curfew anymore, as like still a challenge, you know? So I started looking and I found some people. It was like a room in a house. It was a small room and it's next to train tracks and it's out, you know, kind of far from everything, but that was a step, right? I took that step. And for me, it's like, people don't realize, like, if you can sleep in a room with 80 men, probably you can sleep through a lot of stuff. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like, that's my reality, right? I can put up with a lot. I can be patient. I can be understanding. And I don't think that I got a lot of things coming. You know, I think that that's like one of those things that in prison, oftentimes you get to figure out what your entitlements are. I used to think, I didn't even do it. I'm innocent. That means they're going to take care of me. You know, medical is going to take care of me. Mm. No, you know, it's not true. You know, medical was not going to take care of me. And I mean, it's just one thing that I learned, right? Amongst many, many things and entitlements that we walk around with all the time until you're like staring it in the face. But so yeah, I was looking for a spot. And interestingly, I found a spot with a really good friend. They were going to be coming into town only a certain amount of times. I would be kind of like the primary person at that spot. For me, a big part of it was like being responsible for my own mess. Like, I don't want to be responsible for other people's messes right now. And I get it. Like, people in America constantly, parents are always responsible for somebody else's mess. But that doesn't mean I want that in my life right now. I'd like to, you know, have a place that I can keep clean, that I can feel good about coming, that I can bring guests to, you know what I mean? And I'm super thankful for the spot I have now. Like, the person who said, yeah, like, I put out my whole story to them before I moved in. I was just like, this is my experience. This is what I've been through. This is who I am. And they're like, all right, let's give it a try. And we start with month to month, and I've lived there a few years now. And that was cool because it's like people saying yes, right? It's like people saying, we're not going to judge you based on a piece of paper or a name or a sentence, but we're going to like welcome you as the person you are standing in front of us, which is really all I want in life, you know? So found this really nice spot with a friend, just a good place. And got to tell my PO that I'm going to move there. I gave her like 3 weeks, let her know. And then she was like, so I figured everything was good, right? This is this perfect place, right? And then she's like, no, you can't move there. She's like, you can't go there. And one of the main reasons is I'm engaged. I got engaged. Thanks, guys.
Bam.
Thanks.
Congratulations.
And so I spend time at my lady's house, you know, like we spend time together. That's why we like each other. That's why we got engaged, right? And she's like, well, if you're spending more than, you know, half the time there, you live there. That's what she said to me. She goes, I was like, I do. I'm like, I have my own spot. And So she goes, why would I let you have this? Why don't you just move in with her? And I was like, well, we're going to move in when we get married next year. And we just want to like give me some time to get to know the family, kind of give things time. And then when we're ready, we'll do that.
Yeah.
She didn't understand that. That was like, you know, Sanskrit.
It wasn't her business.
Right.
This has nothing to do with my parole stipulations. We're not getting married.
And that was the answer was no, right? The answer was no. And I don't know if you think about this, Quiz, but sometimes I think about, and today has been kind of hard for me, man. I've been having kind of a hard day, but I've been thinking about why I don't give up. Like I never do. Like I always keep moving forward. I always do the best I can. I always try to learn and try to grow. But sometimes, man, I feel like just giving up. Well, she said no. This put my friend in a bad predicament because they'd already put a deposit down because I thought this is a done deal. Like I'm waiting 3 weeks to hear back. There's no reason to say no to this place. Well, I decided to call. I let her know that I wanted to appeal it. I talked to the head parole person, right? And that took weeks. Like anybody else, if I didn't have this person who was like totally had my back to get this place, it's gone, right? You can't take a month and a half to find a place.
Yeah.
And that's how long it took. It took a month and a half. I had to appeal to the head of the parole office. I had to tell him why I thought this was a good idea. And they essentially were like, okay, we're going to let you and your PO work it out, which is like, okay, there's a door open. So I talked to my PO. I was like, these are the reasons why I think you should let me do it. These are why it's a more positive move for me, more healthy for me, mentally, emotionally. Yes. Better for work. It's better for my relationship, everything. And eventually she said yes, right? And it's like, oh yeah, I won, right? It's like a victory. But man, I mean, I think that when we talk to everybody, people don't realize like when you do your time day for day, which I did 12 years day for day in prison, like in a place with dangerous people and struggle and oppression ripped away from your life, like everything you care about gone, right? In a lot of ways. And then you get out, it doesn't end, you know, it still goes on. It still continues. And sometimes it continues by the system. And then sometimes other people buy in. It's like, I think that's one of the crazy things that we sometimes have to experience. It's like, everybody knows the system's messed up.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows the way that the system and cops and everything operates is messed up, but people also buy in 100% sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's like, but the system said, so I guess I don't know. It's a lot of different topics that we could talk about, but
I'm curious to elucidate a little bit, like, you know, cause I think I encountered you some middle point and you were like drafting a letter to kind of like unravel the process of what an appeal really looked like.
Yeah. You know, there was no appeal process that was like offered to me.
Right.
Like, okay, if you don't like the decision, you know, fill out this form. It wasn't like that. I was like, I mean, I think that we're used to, I mean, even going to trial, I was like a lamb to the slaughter, you know? And most people in prison, they just do what they're told, right? You just go through the motions because it's the path of least resistance. I mean, it doesn't do any good to argue with a cop, like,
thanks,
you know, and also if you really do get caught for something inside, you're just like, yep, you got me. You know, there's some people that will argue to the death. I'm just like, all right, you're right. I sold that drawing to that guy.
Yeah.
Got me. You know, it's like, I'm not going to lie to somebody about it.
Yeah.
It's just not worth it. So, you know, I just started thinking about like, the life, you know, like the struggles, for whatever it's worth. It's like, I need to assert myself. I need to stand up for myself. And I know that no matter what I say, the answer could still be no. So I just wrote a letter. I wrote a letter and then I included a letter from my fiance and I included a letter from the person who I was moving in with and just like shared all that information and my reasoning. I validated what they were saying, you know. Mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying. I get it. I get where you're coming from. You're right. My fiance doesn't want people to show up in SWAT in a cop car. That is true. But it's also true that if you go into her little house you're not going to find like cocaine and AK-47s, you know, like you already know me. I follow every rule, you know, like, no, that's not the case. So this is taking another tangent, but the point of that stuff is to put your boot on my throat. The point of that stuff, all that supervision stuff, is oppression. That's the key. There's a time when it's supportive. There is a person who that stuff works for, who needs that. Mm-hmm. They know who that is, you know? And it's hard. It's hard to understand, you know? Like I've said, you can call me anytime. I'll turn on FaceTime. I'll open every drawer in the house, like walk you around, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever you need. Like, but they were actually telling me one of the rings that they didn't like is, it's hard to come and do a home visit with me. And I was like, well, that I'm never home. Like I work yeah. two jobs. I'm out in the world. I get outside. And also my house is not my favorite place to be. It's far away from everything. I'm like, of course you're not going to find me there. If you want to find me there, just tell me you want to meet me there. And that's where they say, well, part of your parole is that we can do unscheduled visits. I'm like, well, keep on doing unscheduled visits and you're not going to find me. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like I'm hiding, right? That's the whole thing. People think like they can find me anytime they want. Anytime. I answer the phone every time they call. And that's the same thing with sometimes things in society that we're dealing with. It's like, we just sometimes, Queez, I know you probably can relate, just want to be seen as the human being you are standing in front of somebody and not some list of possible transgressions or probable transgressions or things you've done in your past. And it's like, I've had people saying like, well, I just think that the first thing that you should say to somebody is that you were in prison and this is what happened, you know, like that's like the opener. Like, what reality does that make sense in? And is that what you do? Do you just go and like, be like, oh, guess what? You know, like I came from an abusive family and I, you know, like just anybody, you know, it's like, oh, by the way, you know, like I cheated on my fifth grade math test. You know, it's just not like, that's not how people operate. I tell people about my life when I get to know them. And I guess a little bit tell the people who are going to listen to KBOO and Tin Can Phone a little bit about my life too. But the truth is like, if you want to get to know the hardest, most traumatic, horrible things I've ever been through, you might have to get to know me just a little bit, or you might have to actually ask me face to face, you know, and talk to me.
You know, in a lot of people's mind is one prisoner fits all. So like, a lot of what you're saying, with especially like with these systems, with the paroles and the any entity that stands, and I'm not going to say against us, but just with the system, it's because they've seen it already, or if they heard it all, or they, you know, and it's usually from a long line of drug addiction, you know, but like, yeah, it just, everything you said is because one prisoner fits all. That's just how they look at it until you show them, you know, the difference. But like, I'm not going to lie, Blue, a lot of times what I get is that I've never would have guessed you don't look like you spent a day in prison. You know what I'm saying? Like, I get that all the time. So like, you know, I'm not even the type that's going to talk to you about nothing anyway. Like, I'm just not him, you know? Like, I don't really get it. Like, I don't know. I try so hard. And like, my personality, my charisma, you would most definitely think that I was an extrovert. But emotionally, I'm an introvert, though. Like, I really like to be by myself. You feel me? Like, I really like everywhere I go now, I'm by myself. Or I got my son with me. I don't ride with homies. I don't. Like, you know, like, I don't really like to talk to people. I don't really like telling people this was going on with me type. Because you just know, like, this 2022 and clout is everything. So for somebody to embarrass you to feel good about themselves or get a little bit of clout, like, you know, we're in the world, we're in the time of the internet. And I understand that. So, and I'm so still close to, I'm right here with the streets. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't really know no other way to put it. Like, I'm not like away from it. Like, every person in my phone, every person I talk to is like, you know, so, but it's just like you were saying, Blue, I feel it. And it's one prisoner fits all until we show them that we're the difference. That's all. That's,
I think that's like, that's a good notion. One thing I think is like, how many exceptions have we seen though? Right. That's the thing that I think is interesting is like, how many extraordinary people have I met that were in prison? Like,
how many people have you seen walking to the stereotypes too, though?
I've seen a lot.
You know what I'm saying? People praise that.
People that ever think that it's just one, right? I mean, Nelson Mandela was a prisoner, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's not an average guy, but still, it's there's enough exceptions to that rule that it's like, meet people as an individual, right? Like, discrimination and prejudice is about treating everybody as a member of a group, right?
Yeah.
All these people, because of their being a part of a set, like, must be the same. Like, that's like the root of like evil actions. Like, how about meet me?
That's why they strip us down, and that's why they make us wear the same thing. The whole ideology behind the strip down is that you less than. You know, they used to rape the men back then. Slavery, they would rape the men in front of everybody, the whole crowds. And, you know, the same thing with the bendovers and coffin, the COs laughing and everybody lined up with no privacy. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's all to demand to break spirit. You know what I'm saying? Everything they're doing there is literally to break spirit. And that's why it's called a punishment. And punishment is meant to break you. So, like, yeah, for me, it's just the people who live into the stereotype. That's why I tell people to stop living into, like, stop getting all the tattoos and stop doing what you always heard prisoners doing and walking around with your chest poked out. I did 10 years in prison. Like, bro, nobody give a f-. No, I'm just saying. Hey, I'm just saying. But no, that's really...
Go ahead.
But just a note for anybody coming home from prison, man, look, we are taught in there that we won't get housing because of our felons. We are taught that, you know, as soon as you mark that you have been arrested, you know, all these things are just down the drain for you. I'm here to let you know that they're not, bro. Like, you know, you explaining what's going on in your life is going to be the best thing you can do for you. Don't allow them to look on the internet and don't allow people to see what the internet paints you as. You know what I'm saying? When you go to these job interviews, when you go to these apartments, understand that these people are owners and these people are managers, but these people are human. And a lot of times, especially now in 2022, man, people are taking and invest in human. And, you know, if you could tell somebody yourself what's going on with you, then that'd be the best thing you can do instead of letting them do it and look on the internet, man. But it's not over with for you. A felony is something you did, man. You got in trouble when you was a kid. You're a better person now. You better talk that line to them.
And I think it's really fascinating. I mean, what you were saying, Quees, about people living the stereotype. I mean, I think some element of that is there's such a level of enculturation that there's not an awareness of what other choice to make. And so you even kind of dug into that yourself. You're just like, I'm actually still this person and I'm doing new stuff, almost like learning how to write.
Yeah.
In your present life. But kind of what you just spoke on, I think, is actually really important. And it fits really well with what I wanted to say about Blue. Blue essentially self-advocated when there was no pathway to self-advocate. Mm-hmm. And I think learning how to self-advocate is actually a hard skill for everyone. But it's even harder when the system is not even designed. You know, that person got to make a choice and there was no recourse for how to resist that choice. And then they negotiated with you, but you had to go to their boss, which I also was curious, not that we have time to dive into it, but I was like, yeah, what was the head PO like? But, you know, just create your own pathway. I mean, as our new intro goes, we went inside and we did the thing in there, but that was a new pathway. There was very few actually examples of that in the country to exist. Yeah. And while there were a few, they were not many, and they were also not local in a specific sense, not in this state. And we're able now, through having created this pathway, we were actually just on the city council meeting talking about our good deeds, right? And so you actually have to share your own good deeds because everyone's ready to tell you what that story is. If you were formerly incarcerated. And for those of you who are listening, I mean, you're doing it. And it's frustrating for me where these are my peers and confidants and their lives are a struggle because, you know, I'll just say it because we got an editor. You motherfuckers out here just doing stuff, ruining their lives without knowing what's going on at all. And so if you're listening and you got a friend who's a punk being a wiener to dudes who are just trying to get back on. And listening to the prior episode, it's the same thing with women. They may have kids. They've got less services. So let's get it. Queez, they're in your ear.
Hey, man, they telling us it's time to wrap it up. Blue, final thought?
I just want to
real quick.
It's those people who support us that make it possible to navigate this world. Without the people who love us and the people like Michael and all the people who are listening who say, like, we see you. We want to be a part of whether it's your life or somebody else's who's come out and is trying to do positive things in the world. Like those people that join with us and welcome us into community, that makes all the difference. It's the most important thing that happens.
Yes, love. Hey, don't give up, man. Believe in yourself, man. You got to believe in yourself. It's called confidence, man. With that, anything is possible, man. And the man above, you know what I'm saying? And to that dude who said, who was talking to Blue and said that whatever he said about us, no. Take care, Paul.
You were listening to the 10 Can Phone Podcast, where you can hear about the influence incarceration has straight from the sources. We tell the stories from the inside out. So make sure to check us out on cable community radio every first Tuesday at 10 a.m. You can also check us out on Spotify, Apple, and anywhere you love to catch your podcast. And make sure to give us a follow over at 10canphonepodcast.com. And follow our Instagram at 10canphonepodcast. This Misfit Adi signing off.